Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios, New York City. Today, we begin, as we always do, with the latest on health and healing. Information that can make us, well, a lot healthier. For example, three natural pain relievers that are as powerful in their therapeutic benefit as drugs, but they have no side effects. So if you have any pain at all, you'll get some help today. And then vitamin E, the tocotrienols. What do they do? Well, you've heard of tocopherols, but have you heard of tocotrienols? And they do a lot. I'll tell you what they do. Then cancer therapy and barriers to open biopharma. We'll get to that, what they're not allowing you to know about real ways of approaching cancer so that people can live a longer and healthier life and frequently overcome many major killing cancers like pancreatic cancer, lung cancer, colorectal cancer. Also, if you've got hot flashes, I'm going to give you a remedy today, and 12 convincing herbs that will help reduce your dependence on cholesterol drugs. And more on health and healing. Then we're going to talk about six things you must know about colloidal silver from Dr. Edward Grope, medical doctor, and why are medical mistakes either the leading cause of death or, according to most medical literature, the third cause of death. Now, it is the leading cause of death because we've written the report and we did the actual studies and reviewed them and collated them. What they didn't do is they didn't add in death by malnutrition in hospital, death from bed sores in hospital, death from infections that a person got in hospitals. If you add all these, then it's number one. But in any case, there's a good little review on this from Dr. Alan Francis. Now, Alan Francis is a medical doctor. He also headed the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Psychiatry, and he's now the one challenging it. Well, he has something to say on that, so we'll deal with that. And then if time permits today, I'd like to give some insights upon the economic plunder of the middle and poor class in America. I want to talk about payday loans and why I believe that they should be outlawed and what you may not know about them. Colin Todhunter, Global Research, has some good research on that. And also, why is it that if you or I commit a crime, we're held accountable? But when banks commit crimes, no one goes to jail. We'll deal with that as well. The Trans-Pacific Partnership and the Transatlantic Trade Agreements, they're both devastatingly bad. They're corrupt. We should not allow them at all. And yet, this president has been trying to fast-track them, and now the Congress is going to pass them. We should be very concerned because everything that we know and hold inviolate will be affected. Later on, my guest will be Robert Morningstar. This is the 51st anniversary of the assassination of JFK, and we have new evidence, brand new, exclusively on our program today, about the missing and doctored Zapruder film. And Robert is the one who discovered it. He is a civilian intelligence analyst, and he's been doing research for a long time. He was, way back in 1969, he was one of the early researchers into artificial intelligence, and in a program sponsored by IBM in the Office of Naval Intelligence. So he's got something to share with us today that no one knows about. Let's begin. Now, there's two fractions to vitamin E. One, historically, we've always known about, and that's a group of chemicals inside vitamin E called tocopherols, like alpha-tocopherol, beta-tocopherol, gamma-tocopherol. But there's also another fraction called TOCO, that's T-O-C-O, tri, T-R-I-E-N-O-L-S, E-N-O-L-S. And these are extremely beneficial to the heart, to the lungs, and to the brain. But there's new research now from the peer-reviewed journal Nutrients, from a report from university, it says, quote, vitamin E tocotrienols from annatto, which, by the way, is a fermented soybean paste, may improve bone shape in males. And the annatto tocotrienol, mainly composed of delta tocotrienols, was found to be completely preventing erosion of the bone surface and decreased bone formation associated with testosterone deficiency. So that's good. One more thing that it does, along with everything else it does, including helping to naturally thin the bone, thin the blood, help preventing strokes, great for your heart, it's good for almost all heart conditions. So just so you know, there, tocotrienols are forms of vitamin E, and there are eight forms of vitamin E. There's four tocopherols, alpha, beta, gamma, and delta, and there are four tocotrienols, alpha, beta, gamma, and delta. And so get them into your diet. Now, we have a nation that's in pain. In fact, about a year and a half ago, I published a book on natural pain relief. Now, there have been a lot of books on pain relief, but this one offered some different approaches, and it was based upon a study group that was able to overcome their pain in less than 4 weeks. It was 28 days, and it was methodically documented. And you couldn't even get into the study unless you had had pain in your joints for at least 7 years. So it was able to be reversed. And by the way, we've continued to follow up on those people, and it stays reversed. So I want to share with you today the latest on natural pain relief. I'm going to make it easy. There are about 26 items. Let me give you three of the best. First and foremost would be Boswellia. B-O-S-W-E-L-L-I-A. Boswellia. And it's also called Indian frankincense. Comes from India and Africa and the Mediterranean. It's been used as an anti-inflammatory for a long time. And what's unique about it is what is called the boswellic acids. And what they do, quite simply, is they block overproduction of cytokinetic activity in damaged tissues, and then they allow a better blood flow going into your joints. Because remember, when you have swelling around any part of your body, your knee, your ankle, your joints, that means that blood cannot easily get in or out because you've engorged the tissue. So it's when you relax the tissue and the swelling goes down that then you reestablish healthier blood flow, and it takes lactic acid crystals that cause pain out, allows the body to flush. So Boswellia is very good at that. It can help Crohn's disease, rheumatoid arthritis, osteoarthritis, ulcerative colitis. So it's just as good therapeutically as the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, but it does not cause bleeding. It does not cause death as those do, like aspirin causes death. Now, for those of you who've been told by your physician that you have risk of a stroke and therefore you have to take a blood thinner, more often than not, they'll recommend mini aspirin. Read the scientific literature. Aspirins cause about 24,000 deaths a year from bleeding. But it's worse than that, because on the one hand, this is part of the monotheistic way that medicine looks at illness. On the one hand, to thin the blood, which is good, but you could do it with celery juice, cabbage juice, apple juice, all your green juices thin the blood, vitamin E thins the blood, coenzyme Q10, vitamin C thins the blood, quercetin thins the blood. So we have no shortage of things like garlic and onion, which will thin the blood and prevent strokes. But when you take a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, like aspirin or ibuprofen, you can also then destroy vitamin C, folic acid, B6, and B12. What that does then, while your blood is thin, you also then raise your homocysteine level, which increases your risk of a heart attack. So the very cardiologist who should know this is giving you one therapy to prevent one condition of the heart and actually creating another protocol that will destroy your heart. It makes no sense unless you realize it makes all the sense if you're into mechanistic medicine, reductionistic medicine, then it makes sense. But if you're looking at it holistically, no. Do it right and you prevent both a heart attack and a stroke. So boswellia is one, turmeric is the other. Turmeric is T-U-R-M-E-R-I-C. It too is a very powerful anti-inflammatory. It is one of the best items you can take into your body to relieve pain, all forms of pain. It's been used for thousands of years in Indian and Asian cuisine. And in fact, it works better than any of the pain relievers if you have joint pain, stiffness, muscle spasms, and any chronic back pain. It's the natural COX-2 inhibitor. And so I would certainly recommend it highly for fibromyalgia, for example, muscle pain. And for athletes that work out and have sore muscles, it's good also. And that's because of all the chemicals in it, including curcumin and the curcuminoids. And then we have what is called astaxanthin, astaxanthin, A-S-T-A-X-A-N-T-H-I-N. It can be pronounced two ways. One is astaxanthin. So in any case, it's a deep red-colored phytonutrient, and you create it but with a microalgae, and it's also known as the king of carotenoids. It's extremely beneficial. It's very powerful. One of the best things you can use if you didn't want to use a pharmaceutical anti-inflammatory. There have been a lot of double-blind, placebo-controlled studies showing that it inhibits the known inflammatory mediators, easing the pain. So that's another one. So I would definitely suggest those, all right, because we have a lot of people in pain, and this is one way to help them get out of pain. Now, for the women in this audience who have hot flashes, there's a lot of things necessary, but sometimes you just want to start with one thing and then build on it. So this week and each week, I'm going to give you a different one so it doesn't overwhelm someone who wants to make changes or want to help someone else make changes who's not really into changing. So if you present them with one relatively easy thing to put in the diet, then it's more likely that person will say yes. And that would be organic soy, especially the soy that isoflavones, and also just soy in general. Now, again, this should be the organic soy. Why? Because soy is able to reduce hot flashes in women, but understand it. The body can produce the soy metabolite Equiol, E-Q-U-O-L. And there's been a lot published in Menopause, the journal of the North American Menopause Society. And about 20 to 50% of North American European women have this ability. And generally women between 45 and 55 end up manifesting hot flashes. And if you consume soy in the form of tempeh or soy milk, again, we're only talking about organic, as just one relatively small part of an overall healthy diet, it's been shown to reduce hot flashes and night sweats substantially. So that's crucial. Now, of course, Vitex and a lot of other things will also work into this, but we're just starting with one today, and we'll add on to it. Some really good news on the Mediterranean diet, and that is that according to this study from University of Lincoln in the United Kingdom, if you went on a Mediterranean-style diet, which is principally a vegetarian diet, over a period of about 8 weeks, just that, 8 weeks, you can see beneficial results for the next 12 months. Now, this is really cool, and there's a lot of reasons why. And not the least of these are the endothelial cells that I've mentioned so many times. They line the interior of your entire vascular system in your body, from the large arteries to the smallest capillaries. And that's what gets really made over. And they become pliable. It allows better circulation through them. And that reduces your risk of cardiovascular disease. So the Mediterranean diet, which uses lots of olives and olive oil and fresh fruits and vegetables, they eat an enormous amount of salads and legumes, whole grains, and non-sulfated organic wines. They limit their consumption of red meat. They do have fish, but it makes a big difference. Quote, this is from the lead researcher, a fellow at Sheffield Hallam University, quote, preserving a patient's endothelial function as they get older is thought to reduce the risk of developing cardiovascular disease. So these findings are very encouraging. Although exercise on its own can be beneficial, other lifestyle factors such as nutrition play an important role as well. Considering the scientific evidence already out there that the Mediterranean diet offers health benefits, it made sense to examine how such a diet, when combined with exercise, could affect the small vein of our body due to their important role in overall well-being in the longer term. And then it focused upon how that happened. And here's what they said, quote, you should eat more of the vegetables, fruits, olives, olive oil, tree nuts, and fresh oily fish. Exercise as well. So that's another good thing. And finally, 12 herbs to help reduce your dependence on cholesterol drugs. And that would include alfalfa, holy basil, capsicum, the garlic, psyllium, skullcap, red yeast rice, fenugreek, butcher's broom, Google, G-U-G-U-L. It contains resin and volatile oils and gum. And it's an extract. It isolates ketonic steroid compounds. And these are very powerful. Licorice root and hawthorn berry. One of my top ones would be hawthorn berry because I don't believe there's a better herb in the world for your heart, is a tonic for your heart. It dilates your blood vessels. It's a relaxant. It's an antioxidant. Its bioflavonoid content assists in increasing the flow of blood to the heart muscles and thereby helping reduce the symptoms of angina. It also prevents or reduces degeneration of the blood vessels. And it's used for irregular heartbeat, AFib, mild heart congestion. It restores blood pressure to normal. So from my perspective, it's a superstar. Now, that's not the only group of herbs. I could also have mentioned ginseng and turmeric and cayenne and aloe vera, saffron and dandelion and true blue skullcap and thyme, black cohosh and yellow dock and burdock root and echinacea and red clover. But you get the idea. There's a whole lot of good from just doing it naturally. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to take a brief break and be right back. Please stay with us.
Day after day, I'm more confused. Yet I look for the light through the pouring rain. You know that's a game that I hate to lose. I'm feeling the strain. Ain't it a shame? Oh, give me the beat, boys, and free my soul. I wanna get lost in your rock and roll and drift away. Oh, give me the beat, boys, and free my soul. I wanna get lost in your rock and roll and drift away.
I'd like to welcome you from all over the world. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to be learning a lot of things in the next 15 minutes before our guest arrives to present brand new information that you have not been exposed to in any of the media on the Kennedy assassination since today's the 51st anniversary. And of course, we will present you brand new information from the person who discovered it. But before then, Obama's commitment to nuclear weapons, good. Violates the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, terrible. So I'm going to deal with that. Six things you must know about colloidal silver. Why are medical mistakes are number one or number three leading cause of death? That will be these are all short commentaries. And according to Bruce Dixon, a Black Agenda report, if the economy is recovering, good. Why is there such a surge in homeless children? Not good. You see, it's who's sharing the information that creates our reality. I'm a big believer in colloidal silver. I've seen it work. I've seen how it's helped save lives, in point of fact, when nothing else would work, both topically and internally. But there's a lot of myths out there about it. So Dr. Edward Grope, in healthfreedoms.org, has shared what he said, six things you must know about colloidal silver, and I read them, and I agree with him. Number one, parts per million. That's mildly important. So when it comes to colloidal silver, don't get caught up in how many parts per million, or PPM, a solution has. Although it's not a mundane detail, what's really important is the particle size. Now, why is that important? Because smaller particles can move more easily throughout your body, and they're more bioavailable. So particle size of less than 0.005 microns are ideal. So write that down. 0.005. That is what you want. Secondly, your colloidal silver should be clear. A quality colloidal solution should appear clear. Other colors may indicate the addition of chemical additives, and darker colored solutions all occur as a result of the presence of stabilizers, additives, salts, or proteins. And best to get the clear one. Also, silver won't upset beneficial intestinal organisms. A lot of people use silver as a defense against harmful organisms, unlike antibiotics, which wipe out, virtually destroy all your good and bad bacteria. Colloidal silver does not destroy beneficial bacteria. Silver absorbs quickly into the upper GI tract and little gets through to cause problems for the beneficial bacteria in the smaller intestine or colon. Also, I'm sure you've all seen it. I have someone who's come by the office who's turned blue. Literally, their skin is blue. Silver. And that's because they were using, it's like a silver blue. They've been using way too much colloidal silver. You really only use colloidal silver if you have an infection. If you have a topical infection, a scratch, cut, burn, you can use it. If you've eaten something you feel has gotten you sick, you can use it. Cold or flu, you can use it. But outside of that, you shouldn't. It's there for an emergency use for a short period of time. Now, that turning of the skin is called agraria, and It develops when silver proteins cause a bluing of the skin. And while that can happen when people use ultra-low quality silver solutions, generally the pure hydrosol colloidal silver without additives, proteins, or salts, when it's completely clear, doesn't generally cause that. But purity matters. Remember, colloidal silver isn't just a mixture of silver and water. It's a solution where the silver particles are suspended in water and have an electrical charge. And this type of solution requires ultra-pure water. It also requires special equipment necessary to create and maintain a constant charge. And many colloidal silver home brew kits use salts or other compounds during the brewing process to suspend the silver in the solution. And products like this do not offer the same effect as colloidal silver produced with high-voltage technology. And so you're more likely to have the side effects if the coloration, if you use the poor quality. So those are just the latest on that. Now, all of us, or at least any responsible person in the world today, realizes the dangers of nuclear. I'm against all nuclear, including nuclear power plants. We're trying to close the remaining 100 that are open. We've closed 4, and it's a long process. They're a danger to society. They're a danger to the earth. And yet, read exactly what Obama said when he was getting his Nobel Peace Prize. Read what he said when he was campaigning. He has done just the opposite. And Howard Friel of Common Dreams laid it on the line for us. Let me quote him. This is an article. We've republished it along with hundreds of other articles today, as we do every day on our website. And by the way, I was just told by Jason that we had just yesterday 1.4 million people. That's just yesterday. Every day they come, they read, they share articles, documentaries, listen to broadcasts. So number one in the world in progressive commentaries and progressive radio listeners. So we thank you for that. There are two major threats to the Earth. This audience knows both: climate change and nuclear weapons. Now, 2 months ago, the New York Times reported that the president had initiated a program that was $1 trillion. How many of you caught that when it was announced? He said it was, quote, to revitalize the strategic nuclear weapon systems of the United States, including nuclear warheads, brand new ones, that's against the treaty, doesn't matter, as well as intercontinental bombers, submarines, and land-based missiles that are poised day in and day out to deliver them throughout the world. Now, the New York Times reported that the Congressional Budget Office estimates that Obama's, quote, atomic refurbishment plans will cost at least $355 billion just in the near future. But, quote, that is just the start. The price tag, quote, will soar after that as missiles, bombers, and submarines made in the last century reach the end of their useful lives and replacements are built. That means that every year, for the next 30 years, $35 billion minimally, and we know that those figures are never accurate, it'll probably be closer to $50 billion, will be spent on the modernization of nuclear weapons. Now, that money, with a commensurate level of focus and commitment now lacking, could go to climate change mitigation, could go to rebuilding the entire infrastructure of the United States, could go to hiring millions of people, but it won't, not a penny. That's not how it works. Furthermore, Obama's decision to modernize the nuclear weapons arsenal of the United States was completely undemocratic. He has yet to announce this decision himself. He made it without any public discussion or debate, and his decision to do so contradicts statements he made to the public to get votes to become the president that everybody just was ecstatic about, except myself and a few others that actually looked at the man, looked at his records. For example, let's be very specific. Let's go on the record with this. July 2008, Obama says time to rid the world of nuclear weapons. Okay? That's what he said on CNN. Quote, It's time to send a clear message to the world. America seeks a world with no nuclear weapons. As long as nuclear weapons exist, we'll retain a strong deterrent. But we'll make the goal of eliminating all nuclear weapons a central element of our nuclear policy, end quote. That was President Obama on CNN. Also, rather than pledge not to attack with nuclear weapons any of the non-nuclear nations, Obama abstained from the 2009 UNGA resolution titled Conclusion of Effective International Arrangements to Assure Non-Nuclear Weapon States Against the Use of or Threat of Use of Nuclear Weapons. Obama also has annually abstained from this same resolution as well. Thus, officially under President Obama, the United States won't say whether it will use our nuclear weapons against a country that has none. A few days after rejecting the 2009 round of the General Assembly resolution, Obama gave his Nobel Peace Prize speech on December 10th in Oslo. And while referring to the 1970 Treaty on Nonproliferation of Nuclear Weapons, he said this. This is when he was receiving the Nobel Peace Prize. Quote, "In the middle of the last century, nations agreed to be bound by a treaty whose bargain is clear. All will have access to peaceful nuclear power. Those without nuclear weapons will forsake, and those with nuclear weapons will work towards disarmament. I am committed to upholding this treaty. It is the centerpiece of my foreign policy." Yeah, well, he lied. Indeed, the bargain of the NPT, Non-Proliferation Treaty, was non-proliferation among non-nuclear states and disarmament by the United States. Quote, "Each of the parties of the treaty undertakes to pursue negotiations in good faith on effective measures relating to cessation of the arms race." Thus, given Obama's clear record of rejecting the General Assembly's efforts towards nuclear disarmament and his recent decision to initiate a modernization program that will take at least 30 years at $35 billion a year, he has clearly violated even the most lax interpretation of the Non-Proliferation Treaty Article 6 obligation on nuclear disarmament. Incredibly, in its report, the Times quoted a senior official in the Obama administration who referred to the president's decision to commit the United States to $1 trillion nuclear weapons refurbishment effort as one of Obama's legacy achievements as president, noting further that the issue was too politically delicate to go on record by identifying himself or herself. The Times thus reported, referring specifically to the nuclear weapons issue and the expense, quote, "This is Obama's legacy budget," said a senior administration official who spoke on the condition of anonymity because of the topic's political delicacy. Well, a decision of this magnitude is therefore made without any announcement from the White House or presentation by the president himself to the American people. Now, wouldn't you assume that if he was going to spend $1 trillion of our money on something that only has destruction as its goal, that is so deadly, that only benefits the nuclear industry and the military-industrial complex generals and admirals who lobbied for it, wouldn't you think that this would at least have been a point of discussion somewhere? Well, it turns out that your Democrat and your Republican legislators knew about it, were on board with it, and certainly would benefit from it. So there's your hope and change. And yet tomorrow he would be reelected. So I can't blame him. It's the American public that should take an honest look at their belief systems. And here's something else. In America today, we would rather die worshiping at the altar of orthodoxy than to be cured and be considered extreme, trying one of those unproven methods of natural treatments. That's the reality. This year, more than 550,000 Americans will die using only surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy. They will never even consider alternatives, even though we have physicians, board certified, good science. We have thousands of people alive and well today who had advanced cancers, who's using natural techniques, have reversed them, but there is absolutely no interest in this. Why? For many reasons, not the least of which is that we cannot share a belief in two principles simultaneously. So the dominant teaching is what we go by, and that is that only official science is recognized. And hence any other is not considered official, and it's not even considered science. So if you're a physician inside the medical community, if you're a board-certified oncologist, and if you're able to buy chemotherapy drug for $5,000, turn around and sell it for $12,000 to a patient, that's 1 month's supply, and the patient's already given you, let's say, 12 months of therapy, so you've made a lot of money off one patient, all right? That patient will spend several hundred thousand dollars, generally about $220,000 before they die, and they will die because you have no cures, you have no science, you have nothing legitimate on your side, but you have everything that you need. You don't need proof, you don't need results that are positive, you don't need reason, because you need nothing in America in any belief, whether it's religion or politics, education, or law enforcement, no matter what area you go into, all you have to have is power. Power becomes the ultimate dictate, and that's all you need. And we've seen that. So when we look at what is the number one cause of death, it is medicine itself. Now, according to Dr. Alan Francis, it's the third leading cause of death. But I will be sending him today 327 pages of medical documents using only Orthodox medicine's own figures. They simply didn't include all the different areas of death in a hospital to show it's number one. But we published the article. It was sent to 7,000 journals. It was sent to 12,000 scientific and medical magazines. Not one responded to it. Five authors, all MDs and PhDs, on it. And it was meticulously referenced and researched. It's called Death by Medicine. Here's what he has to say. Quote, why are medical mistakes our third leading cause of death? How can you avoid being the next victim? This was published in the current issue of Psychology Today. Quote, I spend a lot of time going around to different places warning professionals and the public that overdiagnosis, overtesting, and overtreatment are bad for our health. Recently, I've been witnessing these dangers firsthand. I have a friend who has lung cancer, the good, slow-growing kind. His doctors have been less kind than the cancer. They keep screwing up in ways that seem likely to kill him before his cancer does. The basic problem is that modern medicine consistently violates the ancient advice of Hippocrates. Quote, it is better to know the patient who has the disease than the disease the patient has. My friend has a small army of highly specialized doctors, all treating lab results in one tiny medical domain while ignoring all the aggressive stuff the other specialists are doing. None of the doctors has a global picture of my friend's treatment and the specific risks and benefits that apply to each new test or treatment. The result is dangerous medical chaos. Doctors love pictures and get paid a lot for ordering and reading them. Over the years, my friend has been subjected to countless, mostly unnecessary imaging studies with a contrast dye that have compromised his kidneys. It seems likely that renal insufficiency will kill him before his lung cancer does. He is also no longer eligible for additional lung cancer treatments because his kidneys flunk protocol requirements. And along the way, he has also been prescribed several unnecessary medications that also hurt his kidneys. Everyone focused on the lung cancer, and no one noticed the harm they were doing to his kidneys. There have also been several close calls because he was prescribed multiple medications by multiple doctors without anyone coordinating or consulting anyone else about interactions and synergistic harms. The mistakes were all easily preventable if anyone were minding the storm, paying attention to the patient, not the lab tests. In any common sense world, doctors would care about risks and harms and wouldn't always be rushing to order stupid and dangerous tests and treatments. The reoccurring mistakes in my friend's care are the rule, not an exception. Medical error is now the third leading cause of death in the United States, with 440,000 deaths a year caused by hospital mistakes, and who knows how many more from outpatient mistakes. Hippocrates must be spinning in his grave. We have lost track of what should be the most important dictum in medicine: do no harm. Too many doctors, too many tests, too many procedures, and no one keeping track. It's a prescription for disaster, and disaster keeps happening. The wise neurologist Nicholas Capozzoli of Annapolis, Maryland, has this advice for his elderly patients. Quote, "If you want to have a long, happy, and healthy life, try to do two things. One, don't fall, and two, stay away from doctors." Unfortunately, certain diseases like cancer force us to break rule two. We need doctors and the powerful treatments they sometimes have to offer. But we can't trust doctors and hospitals to get it right. I'm getting in the habit of joining my friend at his visits to make sure the doctors and nurses don't screw up. You shouldn't need to bring a doctor along to doctor the other doctors on how to protect you from your doctors. The system is broken. The incentives are all wrong, and it's not likely to be corrected soon. Too much money is being made by powerful corporations and institutions that profit from the current lack of coordination and sensible regulation. Free market medicine that treats health care just like any other business modality just doesn't work, because it puts profits before patients. For now, the only protection is a well-informed consumer. Yeah, you got it right. But it is the number one cause of death, and I'll correct him on that. So wouldn't you think that something that kills more Americans each year than all of American casualties in the First and Second World War combined would get some attention? Should. Doesn't get any attention. And so it is. This is from Bruce Dixon, Black Agenda Report. It's short, but makes a point. For the last three elections now, 2010, 12, and 15, corporate media and corporate politicians have ceaselessly assured us that the economy, whatever that is back on track, wherever that is. Despite what corporate media and politicians tell us, the positive indicators of soaring stock market valuation, rising real estate prices, and the rig unemployment figures that don't count the jailed, there's 2.5 million, the recent release from jails and prisons, and those who've given up on finding work, now you're 20 million, and those working part-time who desperately want full-time hours, but they don't have it. Now you're up to 50 million. Last week, an extraordinary and shameful study emerged from the National Center on Family Homelessness, confirmed that demonstrating 2.5 million children in the United States were homeless last year. That's one in every 30 in what we're accustomed to thinking of as the richest nation on earth. In the most recent months of which statistics exist, the rate of homelessness among children is spiking up to 8% nationally and 10% in some states, like the District of Columbia. The causes of homelessness among children are not only confronting stereotypes of drug use and mental illness, they are confronting because they encourage us to blame the drug addicted and pity the mentally ill, and our comfort keeps us from questioning the capitalist system, which declares that we must have poverty in the midst of plenty, or wondering why we ourselves are no more than a month or two from homelessness. America's shameful surge in homeless children is caused by the fact that wages are not rising, low-income housing is not being built, and the stock of available housing is being demolished or cannibalized by gentrified speculators. Speculators can't make money off stable neighborhoods, so the poorest have to leave wherever they are to make room for something else. In California, the nation's most populous state, 34%, let me repeat that, 34% of households are paying more than half their annual income on rent. And while the state's minimum wage is $8 an hour, a two-bedroom apartment at a third of an annual income would require tripling the minimum wage to $25 an hour. The issue then is poverty. Millions of children are not suffering because their parents have suddenly become addicted or unmarried or neglected or lazy or stupid. Their parents, many of whom are working as hard as they can, are simply not able to afford a roof over their heads. This is just capitalism. It may be a scandal, but it's no surprise. This just happens to be the way our economy works when it's back on track. It's time to tear up those tracks. End quote, Bruce Dixon, Black Agenda Report. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment with my guest. Please stay with us. Before we go to our guest, who's in studio, Robert Morningstar, to talk about brand new information on the 51st anniversary of the assassination of JFK, information that he discovered, and he's sharing with us for the first time today, and you will hear it exclusively. Let me just mention that in my newest feature film, that it'll premiere in just a couple weeks, 2 weeks or so, I take on the entire world of corruption at the economic summit. So the major corporations, the think tanks, the foundations, the left and right charities, all of them play a role in why we are having 250 million Americans suffer from privations who shouldn't have to. They work hard, they're decent, they're dedicated people. So this is called Poverty Inc. We're doing it as a fundraiser for this station. If you're going to be there, give a call now because we're going to be out of seats. We have 35 showings in 1 week. I'll be at the two showings each night, the 7 and 9, and we'll have panelists. We'll have people from the film there. So it's going to be very interesting, very exciting. This is one film everyone should see. We deal with payday loans. We deal with everything. And what we have to do to change it. Give a call, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, and you're going to get two copies of the film, and you're going to get a hardback book. You're getting $130 value or $120 value for $30, and it is a fundraiser for our sister station, WBAI. In studio, we have Robert Morningstar. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Gary.
All right, Robert, I'd like to begin with the Zapruder film because you have now received further evidence about its having been altered and doctored in order to conceal evidence that would conflict with the lone shooter theory, and almost everyone today has seen frames used from this footage appearing in public publications and in the media, and it was one of the primary pieces of evidence to put forth the idea that shots come from only one direction, the book depository where Lee Harvey Oswald is alleged to have been. So first, what was it about the Zapruder film that you discovered that gave you an indication that it was doctored? And what was removed and why? And now what is the new evidence you have to share with this audience that will allow us to correlate the missing frames and now have witnessed testimony from a top CIA photo expert when JFK was shot?
There are many layers to this story, and it was, you were right there from the beginning when I discovered the first splice marks and the insertion of anachronistic frames to create an optical illusion As you know, I've discussed the Zapruder film and described it for 22 years as a consciously engineered mass hallucination, an optical illusion, in which there's missing time throughout the Zapruder film. It's anachronistic in that the time has been changed, motions have been deleted, the stops of the car, the reactions of the passengers, most notably Jackie Kennedy and Governor Connolly. As you know, Gary, last year on the very anniversary, the 50th anniversary of the JFK assassination, that Google algorithm dropped an icon on my desk, and to my utter shock and dismay, it contained the missing frames of the Zapruder film. What has been deleted from the Zapruder film is the shooting of the president and the hitting of the president by at least five shots. The three-bullet scenario was implanted beginning Friday and cemented on Monday with the testimony of Dan Rather. Dan Rather mimics Governor Connolly's moves in the car, and three times on November 26, he gave a report of having seen the film, and he mimicked Governor Connolly's motions, and he mimics Governor Connolly. He emphasizes that his suit jacket was open every time, and he says that he turned around in the car and reached back in this manner with his arms straight back as if trying to help the president. That's been deleted from the Zapruder film, and it explains why one of two lampposts that should have appeared in the film do not appear in the film. People who were in the foreground do not appear in the film. The film has been cut. At least 10 feet of film have been removed, and it's pretty well documented now by Douglas Horn, who was part of the AARB, the Assassination Records, the ARRB, the Assassination's Record Review Board, who went into the documentation and has found exactly the chain of possession of the Zapruder film from Friday through Monday when the doctoring was done. But more importantly, he found Mr. Dino Brugioni, who is the foremost photo interpreter at MPIC, the National Photographic Interpretation Center, who saw the uncut, undoctored Zapruder film on November 23rd, and he testifies that what you have been shown for the last 50 years is a fraud. He testifies that the film he saw showed a big white cloud appear when the president was hit, a white cloud, he describes, around the president's head. Next, he describes horrible things. The brain matter and skull flying vertically upwards, several feet above the president's head, directly up, vertically, he emphasizes. And these details are missing in every version of the Zapruder film that has been shown for the last 50 years. In addition, the actual body motions of Jackie Kennedy have been removed. They have made her look like a panic-stricken woman in Tremors. And what she actually did is she embraced her husband twice, once with her arm around his shoulder after he had already been hit in the back and the throat and was gagging. And as that happened, she had her arm around his shoulder, and almost simultaneously, perhaps 1 second, 1.25 seconds apart, two shots ripped in to President Kennedy. The first headshot, they show you the explosive head wound, which came from the right front and above. This opened up the forehead, and almost instantly the second bullet ripped through the open wound and took out the back of the head. This is the only explanation that explains the evidence that the doctors described in seeing the skull wound in Dallas. Furthermore, the frames that we have found show that what you have been seeing for 50 years is sanitized, believe it or not. As horrible as it appears, the horror was far greater. The first diagnosis and the first description of the wounds to President Kennedy were made by Jacqueline Kennedy on the trunk of the car. She climbed out, trying to retrieve a piece of skull, and as Clint Hill climbed aboard, she said, "They've shot my husband's head off." And I did not realize until this year, having found the missing frames, how literal that description is. I tell you, friends, he was ripped apart by a fusillade at the grassy knoll. And by removing the time between the arrival of the three or four shots that mutilated him, they have been able to foist the greatest fraud the world has ever known upon the American people.
They also eliminated the evidence of the grassy knoll shooter.
Exactly.
And any front shots. And we know from the evidence, and you have studied the autopsy.
Yes.
You know that, and the doctors, the first doctor said there were frontal shots.
Exactly.
All right. And yet the Warren Commission said there were no frontal shots.
One of the most interesting bits of testimony is from Dr. Carrico. He was one of the surgeons in Dallas. And later on, they asked him about the head wounds in the president's skull. And they asked him, well, what did it look like? Did they look like a wound of entrance or a wound of exit? And he said they look like both. I said to myself, what is he talking about? How can one bullet look like both unless it made a U-turn? It was ridiculous, and it was that they were covering this fact. The crossfire involved not triangulation but quadrangulation on the president. When the car stopped at the grassy knoll, and it did stop, and this is the eyewitness testimony.
So that they cut out, because you showed me where the flag was flying because of the wind, and then it was suddenly not flying.
That's right, because of the
in one
break.
Frame to the next, and that's where they cut it. But they never thought that anybody would see that a flag was moving, and then it was not moving.
That's right.
Remember when we went down to Daly Plaza and we did all of our electronic measurements and found from the tracer lines of
the vapor trail
from a bullet. Yeah.
Here's the key. I'm glad you mentioned that was the first discovery I made. I was looking for a needle in a haystack. I visualized the vapor trail on the film, and I found it, a Z-295. Now, here's the absolute proof that eliminates Oswald and creates the conspiracy. At the frame, Z-295, a bullet grazed the president's head, knocked him on the head, and then went on to hit Connolly. And 18 frames later, which is exactly 1 second, comes Z-313, where his head explodes. And they come from different directions. One comes from the county records building, and the other ones come from the grassy knoll,
and very possibly the sewer underneath.
Possibly. Here's an interesting thing. One of the eyewitness testimonies, S.M. Holland, was on top. He said he saw a puff of smoke along the long side of the picket fence.
Yes.
And another one who was directly across said, yes, I saw a puff of smoke, and I saw something like a steam pipe venting. Well, guess what he was describing? He was describing the triple vapor trail that was registered on the Nix film. Believe it or not,
okay.
I have found the smoking gun
photograph.
Last
quick, because we're running a little late for our stations, but I wanted to get this in. How did you get this film?
The film's been around for
years. How did you get these missing pieces?
Oh, they were leaked. They were leaked.
Okay, so you got to
leak. Some of them have unwittingly been placed on YouTube, and others have been leaked.
So you got the leak ones to put this together.
Yes.
You've been working a long time on this, so thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Robert.
Morningstar sharing with you new absolute proof with the missing pieces. We've known the Zapruder film. He showed me the Zapruder film 22 years ago that he found. He was first to discover that it had been edited. And indeed, when we did a lot of research, it was edited. But we didn't know what was taken out. Now Robert Morningstar has discovered what was taken out that would have shown his skull going up, shown bullet wounds, shown Jackie actually different motions, hugging him, shown Colony different. They had to get that out or they couldn't have had one shooter. They had to have multiple shooters. Clever that they did it. We don't know who did it, but that'll be a different discussion. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Robert Morningstar.
Thank you, Gary.
Have a nice day, everyone. Real quick, let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, I have a bunch of emails here. I don't know if we have time for them, but I'll give you one quick one.
All right.
This comes from Barry. He says, my wife and I come into the city once a month, and we usually watch a movie or play. And last week I was sitting behind you and your daughter at a Broadway show, and you left after intermission. And he asked, why did you leave?
I left because I found it not to my taste, though it certainly was to the taste of the other people, which is fine. I never give bad reviews because someone else could enjoy it, and therefore I don't want to prejudice anybody. Let them see for themselves. I just find that for my taste, like watching, there were two Broadway shows, Broadway revivals of the 1930 revivals. Cole Porter was one, and Rodgers and Hammerstein was another. One had great choreography, singing, book, and the other, it was based upon a celebrity. They brought in, who did the producer with Nathaniel Lane? Broderick? Matthew Broderick? So yeah. The choreography was designed for him, since he's not a dancer, and the singing was based upon his capacity to sing, because you never want to have your supporting cast and chorus line upstage your star. So I just walk out of it. The other one I really enjoyed and would recommend. Because what we have is we have star vehicles, and you're limited to the degree of talent of your star. Last night I saw Major Barbara, what is considered one of George Bernard Shaw's greatest plays. It's had multiple adaptations. And I left because, again, I felt it was overacted, poorly directed, and I just didn't like any of the characters in it. So I'm just not going to sit there and, you know, but other people I'm quite sure enjoyed it. So it's very subjective, but I'm not going to sit around in a play or a movie if I don't enjoy it. I'm going to leave. Okay.
Good.
All right. Let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hi, Gary. Today, our topic is Beyond the Grand Jury's Decision, What's Next for the Fergusons of America?
Okay, Utrice Lead right now.
I keep forgetting we're not